Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Instant replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ, featuring the best of the best from today's conversations, observations, and ruminations, because great radio is still fresh the second time around. Earlier today on the Mac and Bone Show.
We spoke with WV football GM Drew Fabianich about a month or two ago, too, and he said, look, when he starts sitting down with the NFL executives and gets in front of people, he's gonna go from a mid-second-round guy to a top-of-the-second-round, bottom-of-the-first-round type of player. And this is coming from a guy who was in the Cowboys front office for years. So I believe Drew in what he says in his assessment. He said he's a better pro than Tyler Biotish when he came out of Wisconsin, and they drafted him at Dallas. So that's kind of speaking to what the potential is of Zach. I've heard Dallas in the mix, maybe San Francisco. Detroit seems like a perfect fit, too. But I'm sure if he's still on the board there for Carolina at 33, I have a hard time believing Dan Morey goes in any other direction.
All right, so we have been tipped off by the audience, Bone, and again, best damn audience out there. They told Willie P where to get the good Cuban sandwiches in the Charlotte area. Last hour, this hour, they're letting us know that that is Skylar Callahan. The Skylar Callahan who covers, interestingly enough, he's talking about Zach Frazier, West Virginia. He covers the Panthers and West Virginia. We always, and the Hornets. We always tease him about that combo.
West by God, Virginia, as its okay. The official name.
Yeah. I left its middle name out. How dare I? But anyway, he's saying he believes he might not make it out of the first round. Another texter pointed out, so I was on KB's show yesterday. Another texter pointed out, Bone, that Peter Schrager, who put out his mock yesterday, and he said, like, this mock is based solely off intel as I talk to scouts and GMs and execs and people around the league. He had Frazier going in the first round, too.
Interesting.
So maybe, you know, me saying, hey, you can even trade back and get him or what, maybe that doesn't apply. Maybe he's up there in that Powers Johnson range.
Yes.
Potentially. All right. So
don't call him Powerful Johnson. don't Google that at work.
I keep wanting to call him Powers Jackson. I keep wanting to call him Johnson Powers Jackson.
Yeah.
But the Jackson Powers Johnson. You know what I mean? Johnson does not power to Jackson.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Jackson powers the Johnson.
Oh, this is a lot of Johnson.
JPJ's a lot easier.
Yeah, I like that.
It's a lot easier. It doesn't lead to awkward moments.
Not even our guy yet. We're nicknaming him.
All right. But those are the two cream of the crop. After that, I feel like then you do what, if those two guys are gone, then you do what Sikkema says, and you try to get your center third round, maybe even fourth round. Is that deep? Daniel Jeremiah said there'll be starting interior linemen that are drafted in the fourth round, guys that could start right away, he even said. So anyway, all right, let's get to Joey Logano. Joey Logano's got a big concert for charity coming up May 23rd at Coyote Joe's. Ton of great artists, ton of great country artists. He's going to tell you about that here. Tickets go on sale Saturday at Coyote Joe's website at 10 a.m. But before we get to all that, we got a lot of racing to talk about with Joey Logano, including him telling us why they have really picked up form the last few races. I said, does this have to do with the tracks you've been at, or are you guys figuring something out?
I think a little bit of both. We definitely have made some progress, you know, and a lot of it, the question was going to Texas last week if we were going to be any good there. We've tried some different things on mile and a half here, just trying to figure out how we can get some speed back in it. And I feel like we did in Texas. We led a bunch of laps there and was in position to possibly win the race, if not finish in the top two or three towards the end, and just had a couple restarts that quite frankly, the driver didn't do a good enough job at. So that was a little bit frustrating. But you know, overall, to have the speed back in the car is putting us in position to win. You know, Richmond, we had a car that could have won. Martinsville, arguably, you know, with a few of the right decisions, we might could have won that one as well. So we're in the picture, right? We can see the front. It's right there. So I feel like the wins are coming again at some point. But it's nice to get that momentum built up after having kind of a rough start in the season. So yeah. Nice to start to get that turned around and getting that mo back.
Joey, a lot of opinions and discourse from drivers and people in the sport about restrictor plate tracks. What's your view on driving at those locations?
It's a love-hate relationship, for sure. There's definitely times that you think it's the most fun and thing in the world, and then and it can be happening right until you get turned sideways in front of the field. And I know not many people have experienced this before, but when you're turned sideways and everyone's coming at you at 200 miles an hour, not fun feeling. That's something that I'd recommend.
Only on bumper cars. I've experienced that at amusement parks, but not on a NASCAR track. Yeah.
Yeah, it turns out it takes a long time to stop from 200 miles an hour. So it's a long crash at times, but you know, it's also one of those races where, you know, you're right down to the wire. You don't know who's going to win the race. And I understand why fans love it. And like I said, drivers have a love-hate relationship. It just kind of depends on what side you're on that day.
Yeah, a lot out of your control, I would think. And by the way, not to rub it in, but Talladega this week, Super Speedway racing. Hopefully you are not, you know, spinning like that sideways in front of everybody this week. By the way, on May 23rd, Joey Logano will be hanging out with, I'm sure, plenty of you as music fans. It's his concert for charity. Tracy Lawrence, Walker Hayes, Larry Fleet, among others. He's going to tell you how to get tickets this Saturday for that event at Coyote Joe's on May 23rd. I want to talk a little bit about short track racing. You had a couple of real nice finishes, second and sixth at short track races here over the last few weeks. As a fan, Joey, and I know NASCAR's addressed this, but as a fan, I feel like the short track racing with this, you know, this car that's been used, this new car the last couple of years, it hasn't been as entertaining as I felt it was before. NASCAR's address, hey, we're looking to do something with it. But on the flip side, the intermediate tracks that I used to complain about as a fan, I feel like they're unbelievable. What do you notice that's different as a driver at the short tracks? Do y'all notice a difference, or is this fans, are we whining too much? What's going on there with this car and the short tracks?
Well, I mean, things are definitely different. I think there's a lot. There's so much different. It's going to be hard for me to list them all, but yeah, I'll list kind of the bigger things for you. Probably the biggest thing that we see is the parity in the field. And a lot of times you say, well, that's a good thing because anybody could win and the cars are all really, really close.
Yeah.
Well, that's all well and good, but if everybody is running the same speed on the racetrack, how do you pass that car?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. You're not faster than them. You can't even catch them. So the parity has actually made the racing very, very challenging from our point of view. The details matter more than ever. Restart strategy, pit stops, those things are really a huge qualifying, are also a really huge deal in how we get through the race and are ultimately our finishing position. You know, now the cars do race different around each other for sure. You know, the aero behind them is definitely different. We can't loosen up cars as much as we used to just by taking air off of the car in front of us. So there's definitely some changes with that stuff. But I'd say just the fact that all the teams have gotten closer together, everyone's doing a really, really good job. You get to the top level in any sport, there's not really any slackers. Right, like, yeah. There's no one making mistakes. There's no one wrecking by themselves, not very often, especially on short tracks. So you see, you know, a little bit more of these longer green flag runs because of it.
Joey, you were on the USA Network show a couple years ago about, you know, going behind the scenes of drivers' lives, and you were recently on the Netflix show as well with the same sort of concept. What's it like for you to sort of allow fans to see the personal side, all that goes into being a driver? Have you enjoyed it? What's it like being reality TV star Joey Logano?
Well, it's weird, if I'm being honest. It's not hard to do. It's just weird because you have a camera following you, and everyone looks at you like, who are you with this camera following you? So it's awkward. But, you know, it's great for the sport. It's very entertaining to watch. I learned that, you know, watching back through it, obviously I know what's going on in my life, but seeing what the other drivers do and what, you know, how they live their life is kind of fun to see. And you know, you can kind of sift through what's fake and what's real when you know the people really well. So that part's kind of fun. But yeah, I think, you know, we've seen what these docuseries have done for sports. And I think it really helps connect the fan with the person, right? A lot of times you see the athlete just, you know, whether a sport it is, doing their deal on the game day, but you don't know the human behind it. And I think that helps that connection a lot.
Yeah, that Netflix one following y'all last year is really cool. Really well done. Similar to the Full Swing golf one, which is really cool.
And so, the F1 and Formula F1 also.
F1 was the original Netflix. So, yeah, we love those things. Speaking of you kind of as a person, and this is kind of you as a person and as a driver, I'm reading a bunch of stuff about you, Joey. We're getting ready for this interview, right? And I notice a page, it says the 10 best Joey Logano feuds in his NASCAR career. And I'm like, looking back, oh, remember that one? Remember that one there? Oh, yeah, Kevin Harvick, that was a good one. You had that fire suit line, that was a good one. And I feel like you've talked about this before, but I want to ask you personally, like, you aren't afraid. Like, I remember when you were real young coming in, and you wouldn't back down. And I was like, man, this dude is skinny, young, like a stick figure, and this dude is not scared. You're not scared the way you drive. Do you ever get in feuds? Does it affect you, like, mentally and how you drive, guys? It seems like you kind of aren't fazed by any of this stuff.
Well, you don't go searching for it by no means, but when you have an aggressive nature of driving race cars, it's going to happen every now and again.
Yeah.
There's going to be some back and forth, and it's part of it. I will say I'm not the only one with feuds. You can look at other drivers too.
Oh yeah, they got top 10. There's top 10s all over.
But what I'm trying to say is usually those are the guys up front winning races more times than not.
Yeah.
Not all of the cases, but usually the guys up front usually have some kind of scuffle because they're usually not wrecking for 20th. You're wrecking for the win. And you know, those type of situations usually get a little bit of drama behind them at times, but part of it, it's okay. And, you keep on going through it. And, I don't know if mentally it really changes you much. You know, there's a competitive Joey that when I put a helmet on, it's cutthroat. I'm there to win. I'm very selfish about it.
Yeah.
And then when I take my helmet off, I don't want to be like that anymore. You know, I can be who I really am.
I've got 10 feuds right now myself, Joey.
Yeah, so he's got a lot.
I'm not here to make friends.
He's got a lot.
One of them is a guy talking with you right now over there. Joey, I'm not trying to retire. I'm not trying to retire you by any means. You got a long way to go. But when you start looking ahead to after racing, what interest do you have? Is it ownership, management of a racing, broadcasting? What's next for Logano in racing after this?
You know, I don't 100% know exactly where I'm going to go. I really love broadcasting. I'm up in the booth for 11 or 12 Xfinity races this year, commentating those races on Fox. I really love doing that. I enjoy that. So that would be option one. Option one is I keep driving for a long time.
Yeah.
I'm not looking to hang the helmet up anytime soon. But option two would be that piece there. And yeah, I have a few other side businesses and some real estate stuff that I play around with as well. But, I like to challenge myself just to kind of prove myself I'm not a one-trick pony. I can do something else with my life. But, you know, you never know where life's going to bring you. And as long as I can keep, you know, being competitive and adding to my race team and you know, making everybody better and being in competition to win every week, I don't see myself stopping. So, now, you never know, right? Got kids, got things can change, but right now I'm enjoying what I'm doing.
Joey sells homes. That'll be next on Netflix. How does a driver adapt to a new world? Oh, I can't wait to watch it.
You're versatile, Joey. You're versatile. Yeah. You're not just a racer. And now we're going to put you in concert promoter mode because the reason you're hanging out with us is to get the word out. It's a concert for charity. Joey Logano's concert for charity at Cody Joe's on Thursday, May 23rd. Tracy Lawrence, Walker Hayes, Larry Fleet, and the frontman. I mean, this is a really cool show. And tickets go on sale Saturday. What does everybody have to know about this and how to get tickets?
You said the majority of it right there. It's going to be a great time. We raise money for foster kids and foster families around the Charlotte region. You know, these kids and families, you know, you don't know the the challenges that you're going to be walking through the front door for these families. You know, these kids have been put in situations that's not of their own doing. And my wife and I have such a big heart for these people and these organizations that help give them the tools and the resources they need to become a contributing member of society and the families to help out as much as they can. And it's truly remarkable to see the size of the hearts of these people. So we love supporting them. We've done this for 8 or 9 years now with the foundation. We've given millions of dollars away, and we have some great supporters that make it happen. And one of the ways we raise money to do that is through our annual concert for charity. You said it. It's at Coyote Joe's. You go to coyote-joes.com to get your tickets. We sold this thing out last year. And what the lineup we have this year, I think it's going to sell out even quicker. Tracy Lawrence, you said it. Walker Hayes, Larry Fleet, the frontman. That's your 90s country. You like 90s country. We got Lone Star, Restless Heart, Little Texas, all the lead singers from those bands. So it's going to be a guitar pool. So what happens is each artist will sit up there on stage and sing a song, and then the next one will sing a song, and the next one it goes down, and then it comes back around, and they go through a few loops of that.
Oh, wow.
So it's a lot of fun. It's kind of like you're sitting around a campfire, and they're just having a little jam session. So cool. It's definitely a lot of fun. Everyone's going to love it. It's going to be a great time. If you've ever been to Coyote Joe's, I don't think anyone's been there and not had a great time. So it's going to be a good time.
Check out coyote-joes.com. Tickets on sale for that awesome event at 10 a.m. And thanks to Joey Logano for joining us.
Listen to Mac and Bone every weekday morning from 6 to 10. Instant replay continues with more in a moment. Only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
You're listening to Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ, because great radio the second time around is always twice as nice. This afternoon on the Wesson Walker Show.
Let's get back to Carolina Panthers talk. We teased before the break. How concerning is it that Carolina wants to be a running team and a passing league? Well, Harold Goodwin, let's hear his audio talking about how excited he is that this team wants to focus on running the ball.
I'm excited about it. Obviously, to win in this league, you got to be able to run the ball. Just be efficient, making sure that you're matching up, obviously, your run with your play-action passes to try to get chunk yards when you do take shots down the field. But to me, everything starts up front with the offensive line, the running game, the tight ends, the receivers blocking, and the running back running the ball as well. So I'm just excited for the opportunity just to get this thing going and making sure we have success running the football.
All right. And so we've heard Dave Canales, and he's talked about how important it is to run the ball and how he made sure in Tampa that they kept running the ball no matter what. And a lot of people, it's one of the phrases that have been overused as far as today's NFL is concerned. People talk about, oh, it's a passing league. It's a passing league. Well, last time I checked, you got to be able to run the doggone ball as well, too, to be able to be successful. Now, you could take the Kansas City Chiefs approach to where they were 22nd in the NFL in rushing attempts, followed behind Dave Canales' offense in Tampa that was at 23. But also you look at some of the best football teams in this league, and they still run the air out of the ball. Baltimore ran it 31 and a half times. Buffalo ran it around 31 times. San Francisco ran it 29 times a game, as did Philadelphia, as did Detroit. So I think that running the football, we all know, is still a very vital part of winning in the NFL. And so that's why when people kind of say it's a passing league, a lot of times I just roll my eyes, because running the football is never going to leave as far as being a vital part of a team and an offense's success. Because even the best passing teams, what do you hear when you watch these pregame shows? What do you hear when you watch a lot of these pundits and experts and analysis experts when they talk about it? They always talk about staying in front of the chains. How do you do that? It's by running the ball, setting your quarterback up in third and four, third and five. That's how you have a successful offense, and that's also how you open up a lot of the chunk plays that you can get from the passing game, because you keep teams off balance when you have success running the ball. Are you concerned about Canales and how much he wants to run the football?
Well, I was going to put the caveat on it until you did at the end. Success running the football is what matters. If you don't have success running the football, but you're so stubborn at rushing it on first and second downs, that's when you can absolutely kill your offense. But it's because run the damn ball culture takes over, and you want to be the ground and pound type of team, and you're going to do that constantly, but you don't have success. Well, yeah, you get stopped on first and second down. Now you have a third and seven because you got stuffed because you don't have a good enough offensive line and your running back isn't good enough to get past that or break tackles. Now you're putting a lot of pressure on your quarterback. So I'm totally with you with there being an importance on the run game. I just don't want stubborn was a poor choice of words, in my opinion. When Dave Canales tells you they want to be stubborn running the football, looking at what Tampa Bay did last year with Dave Canales as their offensive coordinator, they actually were the team that led the league by a lot in run pass series when they took the field. Don't love that, because that's conventional thinking. And I do like my offensive coordinators to think outside of the box. And there's plenty of philosophies that Canales has talked about as to why he can be capable of thinking outside the box. But the Bucs did the run pass thing way more often than any other team in the league. And they did so on 53% of their series. So more than half of their series was run the ball on first down, run the ball on second down, pass it on third. But I will say this, if you look at their conversion rate on third down, they were actually the 12th highest in conversion rate on such third down plays in the NFL, which is pretty, it's hard to argue with the results there. So I just hope that you have a lot of balance, and I hope that you're not so stubborn to the sense that it hurts this football team and it doesn't matter. Let's say that you're playing against a really good run stout defense, and then you're like, all right, well, you know, let's just keep doing it because this is our MO. Mm-hmm. And then you don't have any adaptation off of that. That's what concerns me the most. But I do think that Canales, it seems like once the guys pick it up, at least that's what happened in Tampa. Once they started to pick up the nuances of the run game and they kept with it, and then they built in some play action pass, and then you got the football out of the quarterback's hands really quickly, that's when the offense started to hum. And so I'm interested to see how all that plays out. I like the hire a lot. I think Dave Canales is the right guy for this job. But as far as how comfortable I am with the running game, yeah, I'll be interested to see how it all plays out in 2020.
Well, yeah, and what you just said, that was excellent research by you, because you look at Tampa Bay, they were dead last in the NFL as far as rushing yards per attempt. And I think that lends itself to a lot of it being,
because you don't want to be predictable, right?
Yeah, being predictable. But, you know, and also too, when you talk about success running the football, you know, even more playoff teams populate that top 10 when you talk about success running the ball and how good they were this season. So crazy to think the Arizona Cardinals were second in the league in rushing yards per attempt, but Miami, Baltimore, San Francisco, Detroit, Buffalo, and Green Bay all were in the top 10 last season in rushing yards per attempt. And so let's go back now to Harold Goodwin once again, talking about moving Austin Corbett to center, which is also going to be a part of Carolina's newly restructured offensive line.
Well, I don't consider it a big leap. It's something he's done way in his past, but he's a football player. Football players can do many different things. He's smart. He's athletic. He's capable of doing anything we asked of him. So far since I've been here, we've talked about it in my office. He feels comfortable with it. And, you know, obviously it starts with him. And we feel confident as coaches, as an organization, that he can lead us in the right direction. And he's going to have two big guards next to him. So all he's got to do is lead the way and we should be fine.
So that's that was more analysis from him. And so when you look at this Carolina Panthers offense, and we know that they're going to add more to it via the draft, hopefully a starting level receiver. Do you feel like that they have the requisite pieces to have a devastating rushing attack?
Devastating seems strong. I think they have the requisite pieces to be formidable compared to what they were last year. Mm-hmm. And they were a better run blocking offensive line unit than they were pass protecting, but they still weren't amazing. Like Bradley Bozeman, that was his stronger suit. But that's because he was so bad at pass protection. Left guard, Chandler Savala, not even he was good in run blocking, but he was much better at run blocking than pass protection because he's the worst guard we've ever seen at pass protection.
Got a zero.
It's amazing. Is that where that comes from?
Zero.
No, that zero came from Merrill Hodge talking about Drake May.
But that's right. Merrill Hodge, if he was describing the grade that he got in a game, Merrill Hodge would say this about Zavala's pass protection.
Zero.
Get zero.
And then he had, what was it? Was it 14?
They weren't good. No, they
one game.
They were the worst grades that we had ever seen. Sorry, I didn't mean for this to be a Zavala dump on segment, mm-hmm. but it just goes to show you that Damian Lewis is much better at run blocking than Zavala or really any other guard they put there. That's true of even Brady Christensen, by the way, who was good enough to hold that job down when the offensive line was pretty good 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Damian Lewis is better than that. So I think they're going to be above average in run blocking this year, Wes, and maybe even better than Tampa Bay with Chuba Hubbard, because that's a part of the running game too, right? If he's going to be your starting running back. Rashad White's real dynamic in the passing game, and I like him in that role down in Tampa. But running between the tackles, he wasn't very good. His rushing yards per over expected weren't very good compared to others. Chuba was in the positives. So, yeah, I think you're going to see something better. And if you can have success running the football, which I think they can, Wes, which ultimately, if we want to simplify this entire conversation, can you have success running the football on early downs and overall this year? I think Carolina can. And yes, that is going to help Bryce Young capitalize on the passing downs.
Well, I think, too, you look at the fact that Chuba started 12 games and still finished with 902 yards and 5 touchdowns. I mean, you'd like to think if he started 5 extra games with that rushing total, I think it clearly would have been over 1,000 yards. And so when you put that into the equation as well, I think that the Panthers do have the requisite tools to be able to be a pretty good running game, because yeah. You're talking about Tampa Bay's offensive line. A lot of people are saying, oh, well, you know, he's coming over and how good is he going to be able to run a football if he wasn't able to do it in Tampa? But I think now this offensive line, especially in the way in which you decide to use them, I think that they could be more formidable than Tampa Bay was, because we know what is Icky's strength at this point. It is run blocking. Then we talked about Damian Lewis and Robert Hunt. These guys like to run the ball with those big bodies and getting in there. And sometimes as offensive lineman, when you're that big, yeah, you got to be able to hold your own from a strength standpoint, but sometimes just those big bodies getting in the way. If you got a good enough back, they can make it happen and find those creases. Austin Corbett moving over to center, and we know Taylor Moten, what he represents. Tommy Trimble is a tight end at this point that is more known for his blocking.
And so is Ian Thomas.
Yeah, then his rushing. And so now it comes down to, we know Adam Thielen's a vet. He's going to block. That's the big thing I talked about with Deontay Johnson. Sometimes people don't realize how big of a factor wide receiver blocking is in effective run plays. And when you look at the teams that are at the top of the sport, as far as rushing the football as well, you better believe that wide receivers are getting in guys' chests and making it happen. But I do think, I'll say at this point, I'm with you, devastating may be a bit rich, but I do think that they have enough to be able to keep themselves ahead of the chains in most games. And I think your receivers also play a part in that, helping them out and allowing the box not to be overloaded because you're fearful of the threats. And so I think that's why the wide receiver selection too could go a long way towards that.
Yeah, maybe that does happen, because as much as I absolutely love the Deontay Johnson trade, I think it's among the best pieces of business that this team has done over the last couple of years. He's not going to help you blocking in the run game. That's not his game. He's one of the best at getting open, which yeah. That's what I'll trade for if you need help for Bryce Young. But you're going to have much more success blocking in the run game with some of these other guys. You are right, though. Like, with some of the best teams that run block, yeah. You go to the Rams. They run a lot with Kyren Williams. Mm-hmm. Puka Nacua will get in there and block. Yeah. So will Cooper Kupp.
Yeah.
You look at San Francisco. Mike McDaniel is the one that preached this. I remember the clip that went viral with him speaking about this with the wide receiver room, saying, go look at Debo and how he went and blocked for, I think it was McCaffrey in this clip. Maybe it was like a Mostert at the time still, but it was how well Debo did. And even Brandon Ayuk, a willing blocker. Right. That's more of a culture thing to me. I think this is what San Francisco does.
But you look at Carolina in their heyday, Steve Smith and Mohsin Mohamed would get after your behind on running plays.
Oh yeah, for sure. And that's a John Fox thing. Right. So when you're a team that has built your entire offensive backbone on running the football, and now we're talking about something completely different. Mm-hmm. San Francisco has a lot of play actions built in. We know about the ability for Shanahan to scheme open his wide receivers. But yes, they do put a lot of importance on the run game. Shanahan is the best run designer in all of the NFL. And I think a lot of that does come from wide receivers blocking. We can't, like, beggars can't be choosers. here in Pantherland.
Mm-hmm.
And when we need somebody to get the bleep open, we just went out and got somebody that can get more open than any other receiver outside of the top five guys in Diontae Johnson, and you gave up nothing to go get him. Mm-hmm. So if he gives me 1,000 yards, but he sucks at run blocking, cool.
Nah, I can't do that. I can't live with that. You got to sit on my bench if you can't block at the end of the day, because for one, what
Lance,
that
you're
does
you're going to sit that guy
yes.
that gets open as
hell
best.
Yes.
Well, then you're going to lose games.
Ain't nobody playing. I'm going to lose games if you can't run block for me, because you're going to keep
Deontay
me behind
Johnson
the chains.
Being able to run block as no, well as he needs to get open.
You're going
to
keep me behind the chains because you're not going to be blocking your guy. I don't have an opportunity to be as dynamic as I could be, and I also am signifying to the defense, if it gets to a point where you're hiding the fact that he can't run block, when the defense sees him come on the field, they know, oh yeah, this is a pass. Johnson's out there because we know he's not going to block. That is very detrimental to an offense when your receivers can't block.
Let's look at Pittsburgh last year. Pittsburgh last year was a good running team. They weren't 2 years ago, but they were last year because, one, the offensive line got better, and they mixed up their run packages a little bit more with Warren and Najee Harris, who is a little bit of a bust of a draft pick. He's fine, but not great. And Diontae Johnson was out there, and they still were much better at running the football.
Well, they were 16th.
Yeah, and they were much better this year than they were 2 years ago, and that's fine.
They average the same amount of yards per carry, 4.1.
Look at the advanced metrics. They're better. Like, I know we can do the counting stats, but Pittsburgh got better at running the football last year than they did 2 years ago. It's what everybody who covers the team will tell you, and that's because their offensive linemen got better. Like, so did Carolina's. Their offensive lineman gets better, and now they share the same wide receiver in Diontae. Man, if Diontae gives me, like, that's why you traded for him. I mean, how many?
Because like Flawless says on the text line, if a wide receiver can't turn a stretch or a sweep into a touchdown with the extra block, bench him. That kills your offense when your receivers choose not to block. Now, it's one thing if you are trying. If you just physically can't do it and you're just getting manhandled.
I'm not asking him to lay down.
I'm just saying, but if you can't manhandle, but with what we've seen from Diontae Johnson, some of the things that he's done, the not picking up the football, things of that nature. To me, if he doesn't block, that speaks to him saying, I don't want to block. This is beneath me. I want to catch passes. That's what you pay me to do. Nah, man, you got to be able to do both. Even the greatest receivers in NFL history, all of them block. Michael Irvin, Jerry Rice, even Randy Moss would get in there and block. You got to be able to do it.
I mean, we love Chad Ochocinco, and he was getting
pushed
around.
Chad would block. He would get pushed around, but it wasn't because of lack of effort. Chad Johnson gave great effort.
So, okay, if the bar is so low that you're asking Diontae to attempt it, that's fine. I get that. Mm-hmm. Because I don't want Diontae to just lay down. Mm-hmm. That speaks to something completely different than being bad at it. Mm-hmm. If Diontae Johnson is bad at it, but he's giving you over 1,000 yards in a way that no other receiver, well, I guess Thielen was able to do it on not very good efficiency. But when you're talking about Diontae doing it and not being able to block well, fine. That speaks to something completely different if you're being lazy and not willing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're willing and then you're just getting blown up because you weigh like what, 185 pounds?
Right, but that's what I feel like with everything we've heard about Diontae Johnson and with most wide receivers. Like, it's not like you're going up against every week, you're playing up against a huge corner like J.C. Horn, for example, that's going to be a physical battle. More times than not, you're going to be able to hang with a 5'11", 180-pound corner if you're out there blocking. So that's my thing. If you can't hold your own.
No, if you're
not
willing to, because there's a difference.
Yeah,
right?
But like because a lot of it is that you don't want to block. If you can't block, if you can't block a 5'11", 180-pound guy, you don't want to block.
Well, Diontae Johnson's not going to be good at it. Like, that's so if you're just saying you don't want Diontae because he's not going to be good at run blocking.
Yeah, I don't want receivers that can't block.
Well, then you don't want Diontae,
I don't like receivers that can't block at all.
So that's what's interesting to me. Like, this is somebody that is as good at separation, something that this team desperately needs, as good at separating as any other receiver in the game.
Right.
And you can run pretty easily away from Diontae, and then that can, like, you can even run away from a bad offensive line, a bad offensive lineman. It's not good, but you can still do that and have some success. Man, this guy's already on the outside. Let Diontae run a ghost route that's not even going to him, and then allow the cornerback to just hesitate on whether it's a run play or not, and you can get by so many other ways. No, I would rather have a wide receiver that is good at run blocking. But as long as you're not being lazy.
Wait, you said you'd rather. Okay, I'm up to speed.
I would rather have a wide receiver that is good at run blocking mm-hmm. on top of being great at separating, on top of being great at contested catches, on top of being the fastest wide receiver in the world. Mm-hmm. But if you give me a wide receiver that is amazing at catching the football, not amazing at catching, but the drop percentage has gotten a lot lower, and separating, and he struggles at run blocking, especially with this offense that doesn't have a wide receiver that can separate. Yeah, man, I'm going to make that trade every single time.
All right.
Well, imagine if Dan Morgan said, no, he can't run block. I'm good on this trade.
I'd be fine with that.
It'd be crazy as hell.
No.
You can hear Wes and Walker live and local every weekday afternoon from noon to 3. Sit tight and stay locked because instant replay continues next. Only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
This is Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. Earlier this afternoon on the Kyle Bailey Show.
Coach Matt Daugherty's in studio. A bonus visit from Coach. I wasn't sure if we'd see him again this week, but he's back in studio. Longtime Tar Heel, former head coach, national champ as a player, and always one of our favorites. What's up, Coach? How are you?
It's, I love coming in here, especially when Smoke's here, because I can always give him a hard time.
Yeah, we were just recounting. Coach didn't hear the big women conversation yesterday.
No.
Would you like to weigh in on that?
Yeah. Is that a pun to weigh in on that? No. I would like to avoid that at all costs.
All right. Well, then we won't do that.
I can listen to it if you want to replay it.
No. I don't think we need to put people through that again. Yeah, okay. We probably shouldn't do that. But right. It's good to have you in. There's a lot of things I want to talk to you about. The NBA play-in last night, the Warriors got blown out by Sacramento. Mm-hmm. And we were discussing, what does Golden State do next? You know, Klay Thompson's 34. He wants a new contract. Draymond Green's not the player that he used to be. Steph's still great, but he's not carrying a team to a championship. They were a 10 seed. Like, are we about to see one of the great dynasties in NBA history blown up by?
Yes. Because here's the deal. The worst thing you do, and the Lakers did it right back when they had Norm Nixon, Keith Wilkes. They get James Worthy. They get Scott. And they let some of these players go, like Norm Nixon and Keith Wilkes, that were kind of in their late 20s, early 30s. Because the worst thing you do is overpay for a guy, and he's not productive. And so Draymond Green couldn't guard Sabonis last night. And here's a guy who's supposedly an elite defender, and he struggled. And Sabonis punked him a couple times, which I thought was interesting. Steph is guardable now, you know, one-on-one. You know, I think Clay's injuries are taking its toll, and you go past those three and they're on the downside of their stardom. They really, like, who is the next generation player? So, you know, do you trade Draymond, Clay, and try to get some assets to do a quicker rebuild versus hanging on? And I think the time has come. And they need to move on. And it's going to be really a challenge for Mike Dunleavy.
Yeah, and that's a great point there at the end, because what do you do about Klay Thompson? I don't want to prolong this. I want to bring some more closer-to-home stories in. But, like, he's looking for money from somebody.
Sure.
And there are people saying, well, there are some teams that might be willing to pay him. Maybe the Hornets might be willing to pay him, you know, to bring in a vet. Because we've talked about, it's a bad draft. If you end up with a high pick and you don't love anybody, do you possibly look to move that pick and try to acquire a veteran for this team?
Yeah, but acquire a veteran at you know, he can shoot at an elite level, right? But you're going to overpay. You're not going to develop younger players. Are you a playoff team right now? A lot goes into making that decision, and it's a lot of cap space. And then the what if? What if he gets hurt? You know, he's been hurt before. What if he gets hurt? And so there's a lot that goes into that. And I think that if I would be leery, unless you're a team that has a chance to win it all and they need a shooting guard. And it's like, all right, I'm all in. I don't mind the salary. I'll take the cap hit. We have a chance to win a championship. But if you're in rebuilding mode, I don't know if that makes sense.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm largely with you on that. I think with the money he likely commands, I'm not sure that he fits here. Now, there are a couple things I want to get into with you as well. We haven't talked as much about Mark Pope this week as I thought we would have. Now, we're not in Lexington, Kentucky, but it's big-time college basketball news. And there's nothing like a Kentucky coaching search. Not like we get many of them. John Calipari's been there for 15 years, but it's a crazy fan base. And they were ready to burn all of Lexington down on Friday afternoon when it appeared that Mark Pope was about to be their head coach. You fast forward 24 hours, you know, whoever came up with the idea to bus in the 96 championship team with the trophy hoisted by Mark Pope out. I mean, they turned that fan base 180 degrees with that introduction. I actually kind of like this for Kentucky. I think they need to take a different tact if they want to get back to being near the top of college basketball. I don't know if Mark Pope can do it, but I don't hate the hire for them.
No, listen, here's the deal. There's no reason. Like Jay Wright turned down Kentucky before they hired either Billy Gillespie or Cal. Hmm. Fit is fit. And when you're a guy like Danny Hurley, he's a Northeastern guy. He's making, I don't know, $5 million a year. The dude was a high school basketball coach like 10 years ago. And when I was at SMU coaching, I went to recruit his players in Newark, New Jersey. So, like, he doesn't need much. And he's making now, he'll probably make close to seven, right? He's won two national championships. Why go to Kentucky? Billy Donovan made the most sense for me because his team in Chicago is not doing great. Billy was an assistant at Kentucky under Pitino. He understands recruiting, but that's also it. He understands recruiting. See, coaching in college now is more like coaching in the NBA without the rules. So you have salary caps in the NBA. You don't in college basketball. You have contracts in the NBA. You don't have them in college. So how about this? You're the coach at Arizona, Tommy Lloyd. You have a pretty good year. You got the maybe top big guy in the country, Balo, right?
Umar Balo.
And you're thinking, okay, it was a good chance this guy should come back, right? I'm probably paying him $750 to $1 million. All of a sudden, he announced he's leaving. Like, Mark Pope takes over at Kentucky. He's got like three guys in the locker room for his first team meeting. Like, Billy Donovan will have a full roster to coach every night, every season. And it's now becoming the same egos. You're dealing with agents in the NBA. You're dealing with agents in college. So do you think Balo left and went to Indiana on his own accord, or he had counsel? All these players, high school players, have agents. Is this no structure in college basketball because the outgoing president just panicked and threw up all over everybody and said, we're going to give it to you all. No structure. There's no structure, and that's why college basketball is messy. When you're in the business, it's still fun to watch.
Oh, no, it is. The games themselves, I think, are really interesting and a lot of fun. I mean, March Madness was a fantastic ride, and it always is. But you're right, with these coaches, I mean, Calipari shows up and he's got one player on the roster.
Yeah.
Listen, nobody's crying for these guys. They're making $8, $9, $10 million a year at this point, but it is an entirely different set of challenges. And he's got to find a way to put together a competitive roster in the next, 4 months.
You've got to have NIL pool. All right, I've heard this. Texas A&M, I may have said this last week, Texas A&M for basketball has a NIL budget of $750. Tennessee, $3.5 million. So, listen, at the end of the day, it's about talent. Now, you can outcoach people a little bit, but at $3.5 million, you're going to get better talent than you would at A&M. Bottom line.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I love Rocky Top.
Love it. Best tradition is.
I love Calhoun's on the river.
It's why there's a promo running right now of me saying we cannot say that this NC State run changed Wolfpack basketball until we see if they can capitalize on
it. That's right.
Because you have to use this and leverage it into a bigger pool of NIL money.
Right.
Right. I think it's a great thing what they did. They have all the opportunity in the world, but you got to capitalize. You got to get boosters to pour more money into that pot of NIL collective. Otherwise, it won't mean a hill of beans in 2 years.
That's right.
That's just how it goes. Did you watch the Masters this weekend, by the way?
I did not. I watched replays. You know, it's pretty cool. You go to YouTube and you just watch every swing of Bryson DeChambeau, every swing of Tiger Woods. That's all I did. I was doing yard work. I became the man. I hope my wife's not listening. And I bought a power washer.
Nice.
Yeah, I bought a wheelbarrow. I was the man at Ace Hardware. They love me there. Sam on Brawley School Road.
I could back this up, by the way. My wife saw Daugherty purchasing mulch at the Mooresville Lowe's two weeks ago.
Yeah, man. Like, I'm all in. And my wife's love language is acts of service. So I'm just trying to provide the service.
Trying to keep the missus happy. So you skipped the Masters to do landscaping.
That's right.
Look at you, bro.
Right?
That's like, I mean, that's a veteran move.
Any women listening right now, they're like, wow.
That's a veteran move, man.
Right, veteran move.
But you're trying to attract the ladies with it? You know,
no, they're like, wow, I wish my man could be like that. Like,
oh,
right?
Oh, I got
that's
you.
That's what I'm thinking.
I got you. Okay.
Isn't that what you're thinking?
Yeah, I asked because Scotty Scheffler's amazing, but apparently the general public was not that interested in Sunday at the Masters. It was, I mean, terrible ratings for Sunday at the Masters.
There was no names on a leaderboard. And it wasn't close.
Yeah.
It was runaway.
I mean, I didn't think it'd be that bad, though. I mean, historic decline in ratings for Sunday. It was bad. And I was surprised that it was as bad as it was because I enjoyed the tournament.
Yeah.
You know, now we have familiarity with Max Homa here, right? He won the Wells Fargo Championship at Quail Hollow 5 years ago, so we knew him. But there, I mean, the Spieths, the McIlroys, Tigers, I mean, they were nowhere to be found for most of this tournament. So I think it had an impact. It had an impact. Coach, it was good to see you.
Always. Thank you.
You've tuned into Instant Replay. When the audio was so good, it has to be heard again. Only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.